Namaste. So, all creation, there are two views of creation. One is as it struggles from below upward, and the other view where it is a view from above downwards. So, one of the challenges that we face when we try to understand certain views as given in the Vedas and Sri Aurobindo's view is because Sri Aurobindo is looking at it as it proceeds from above downwards. Whereas Vedic Rishis, though they are involutionary beings, they go up, their path was through the what is known figuratively as the zigzag of the gods. So the question arises naturally that who are these gods? Are they real? Are they for sure they exist? Well, whether they are real or not, the existence of God is a necessity if we try to understand the relation between the one and the many, or let's say between the creator and the creation. Because creation is not a uniformity, creation is a manifold diversity. And the diversity involves a certain degree of limitation of the infinite, or if you use the word more accurately, delimitation of the infinite. And by that delimitation, the one infinite canalizes its powers along certain lines of descent of consciousness. And each of these lines is presided over by a power or respect of the divine. So while all these gods emerge from the one and find their origin in the one, they are united in the one, in actual running of the cosmos, we can call them as cosmic managers. And there is no other way we can understand the relation between the one and this creation. And religions which have done away with the gods have also done away with creation and the cosmos. So this creation and cosmos remains inexplicable. And it's not only, I'm not talking of just Semitic religions, certain lines of Indian thought have also done away with the gods. They ultimately speak only of the one. And then we cannot understand this cosmos, let alone intervene in it. So how do these gods come out? The mother gives a very interesting story. It's partly there in the Rig Veda, 10th mandala, where the one wants to become many. All these are human terms, wants, wishes, desires. But as it wants to become many, impelled by the Adi Shakti, he is himself impelled. He is otherwise, before that, there are no gods, neither day nor night. That's how it starts. There are no gods there, yet it is impelled. So as it is impelled, so first out of him emerge four of his aspects. Now it's very interesting that we were just talking about supermind. Supermind is the power that differentiates between these three aspects, which are part of a one reality, triune reality, Sachidanand. But it's the supermind which by its action, there is Sat, it creates a Sat Lok, it creates a Tapo Lok, it creates a Chidghan Lok, it creates an Ananda Lok, and of course its own world, which is the Mahar Lok. So it's very interesting. Then it differentiates into the lower three worlds. And yet it acts on the basis of unity. This just as a kind of background. So these Sachidananda is a triune reality, but wherever there is Chit, there is Tapas. Consciousness is not just a knower. Consciousness is also a creator. Wherever there is knowledge, there is the will aspect. And while knowledge holds back and looks at the things, whereas will enters into it and actually operates and starts, that's what the Divine Mother, through whom the manifestation takes place. And Agni is described in different ways. So anyways, without going into that, so first there are these four aspects of the one reality which come out. And in Indian thought, they are called as later Indian thought, not in the original Vedic thought, but it all draws from the Veda, the inspirations, the names change. So there are the four aspects, means the first is existence, Sat, the second Chit is Chit and Tapas, and the fourth is Ananda, third is Ananda or the fourth. So it becomes Sat Lok, Chidghan Lok, Tapolok and Anandalok. And corresponding to that, we have the four great gods. The god who is presiding over all existences is Brahma. Infinite existence. In his reality is infinite existence. That's why you see his name comes a close resemblance to the ultimate reality, which is known as Brahman. Of course, the two are different. But there is a reason why the two names we see very... It can multiply existences to any extent. Because in its origin, it is infinite existence. Then there is Chitlok or infinite consciousness. So what does infinite consciousness do? It holds the entire creation with this secret knowledge to which nobody else is a privy. So that's how it harmonizes, sets things in the right rhythm, orders them. So that's how this infinite consciousness is Mahavishnu. And later on in the Puranic states, it becomes Vishnu. The Tapolok is that force. Force and consciousness, they act together. And this force, which is infinite force, it orders itself in various forms in creation. And when necessary, it draws back everything back into itself. So we have Shiva, Mahashiva or Shiva or infinite force, which is Shiva. And then we have Ananda, which is, well, the whole sap of life without which neither creation could be. And we can image Sat and Chit coming together and their unity giving birth to Ananda. But they are actually always together because they are now separated. They are always together. And this Ananda is the creative power in this creation. So as the story goes, that when these four start the creation process, and the mother speaks of them in her own way as light, truth, which is existence, Ananda, which is bliss, and then light and life. So these are the four. And then as they start creating over a period of time, they start losing contact with the one, which is of course a part of the play. So there is a moment when they are united with the one, fully conscious of the one, which is where the divine Maya operates. And when they forget the one, that's where the avidyamay Maya. So there is vidyamay Maya and the avidyamay Maya. So avidyamay Maya makes them forget that they are always joined with the one. So we'll see in Puranic legend stories, one is where we have the Trimurti as Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh together. But we also have stories where Brahma's will and Vishnu's will and Shiva's will, they are sort of seemingly not at complete rhythm with each other, and harmony has to take place through a sequence of events. So when they forget the origin in the one, then these four powers fall and become their opposites, because they apparently become cut off. Apparently, because from the point of view of the one infinite, there can never be that state. And when the power of the divine, which has gone through these four into creation, ends up with the inconscient, then there is an SOS, we may say, the first SOS ever sent from the inconscient, which has become its opposite. Bliss has become suffering, light has become darkness, life has become death, and truth has become falsehood. So there is an SOS for rescue, and now there is a second line of gods which come into existence. So they are part of the rescue team which are brought out by the one, and there is an urgent meeting. And first is the Varuna. Varuna has to find out where the Shakti has gone, where has the SOS come from. And Varuna is, as we know, the god of vastness. So he with his vastness, and that's why when we see in many of these legends, Varuna is very interesting. Varuna is depicted both sometimes as a negative as well as a positive entity. In his vastness, he holds all things. With his vast vision, he can even go inside the depths of the Aprakritim Salilam, the ocean of inconscient, and see that she is hiding there. So Varuna says, okay, she is hiding there, and the Shakti has to be brought back. So then Soma comes out, Ananda. And Soma says, is the godhead of delight, the moon is the symbol, and it says, I'll bring the Shakti out of this state of darkness. So he goes, and Soma, as we know, this Ananda which runs as a sap through creation from the lowest to the highest. But for his delight, the creation, because of his delight, men forget to die, as Aurobindo says in Savitri. But for his delight, because of his delight, none would leave the game, how much ever, because this Ananda is gone inside. But as Ananda wakes up, the mother who has become dark mother, Diti, Aditi has become Diti, and she has so many children who are children of division. So as the story goes that Ananda wakes her up, but then she has to have the power to move step by step. And Agni comes and he holds. So Agni becomes the leader of the journey. All of them are her own powers. But they start bringing her out. And so Agni becomes the leader of the journey. Agni is always, as we know, the power to move forward, the power to go upward. In human nature, it's represented by aspiration, the power that purifies, the power that lifts everything upward. But creation has not only to move upward, it has to also expand because it is infinite. So there we see comes Vayu Matarishvan. So Vayu Matarishvan expands everything. At each level, creation expands. So the recovery of the Shakti is not just a straight line, but also a horizontal line, which also happens in our life. Agni impels us to move forward and Vayu helps us to expand at every level all the riches and all the possibilities it plays with. So we have Vayu, Agni. Soma is the first deity, but it will be again recovered in the last. So Varuna, all these gods have come into play, and when it has prepared the consciousness, the Shakti has risen to a level, and these are the again the chakras which in subtle body we see reflected. Then comes Indra. So Indra is the divine mind. Indra holds in itself all the cognition. It's like a simultaneous global seeing, not the Indra of the Puranas, where we see the Indra is come down a few steps below, but the divine mind as we see Indra in the Vedas. So these are the Vedic gods. Later on in pantheon, they are represented differently. Like Agni becomes Kartikeya. Also we see sometimes in Ganesha, the power of knowledge which remove obstacles. So they assume a different form. So Vedas, the Vedic gods have undergone a change. We don't easily find the mention of Vishnu. There is mention of Vishnu as the eye of the seer extended in heavens. Or we don't find Shiva the way we find today, but as Rudra. So there are these forces which have gone, names change as human consciousness grows, and our connection also changes. And finally we have Indra, who makes the consciousness global simultaneously, where the creation is being released, and then we have the Suri Savitri. They open the doors and then we enter into that through the golden gates into the sun. So this is the Vedic yoga which goes through the gods. But each of these gods, to run the creation for its own purposes, releases several million godheads. So always we see that in the ancient tradition we have Uch Devta and Shutra Devta. So Uch Devta are those, they are also still, though they are still in the realms of the ignorance, but they belong to higher mind and above. And then we have those godheads coming from the same, which are working in the vital, physical and the subconscious regions also. So we have Kali coming out of Gauri, same power, but she identifies the power of the Divine Mother, the fair one, the effulgent one, as we see that hymn to Gauri in Tantra Sar. When she plunges into darkness, she also assumes that character of darkness. She becomes Kali, an extremely destructive force, something which can divide creation ad infinitum. And yet that's how she sets into motion time by her footsteps. So these are very fascinating stories which I don't want to get into, because they are precisely because they are very fascinating. So we have many gods and goddesses, as it is said, 33 million, but yet all of them ultimately can be resolved into 3 or 1.5. Aurobindo uses the word 4 original gods, but yes, 3. And why 3? Because these are the Sachidanand, the 3 original powers. Aurobindo distinguishes, make a distinction between Chit and Tapas. So we have these 33 million gods, so original is 3. So this is the famous question that Gargi asks Yagyavalk, that how many gods are there? So he says there are many gods, 33 million, and or you can say 3000 or 300, or you can say 3 or 1.5. or one. So essentially, original, there is one reality, then you have the three or the four, quaternary, I prefer the quaternary because it makes perfect sense. And then you have all these entering into creation, into many, many numerous emanations, projections. So this is the whole pantheon of the gods, and they work on different planes. Each is given a certain task. It's like a nodus of the one being who holds a certain kind of consciousness, and that consciousness flows through that god for that particular purpose. It was a very elaborate science system known to the Vedic rishis, because they always wanted to integrate the spiritual and the material. So these gods were necessary to understand creation, how it functions. So these gods at once have a physical function, a psychological function, and a spiritual function. So we see, for instance, Agni, it has a physical function. Wherever there is this energy which can lift things up, purify them, this energy which pushes, that's the energy which impels life to break out of matter. Because there is this Agni inside. And at some point, it compels matter to throw out life. It is this Agni which impels living things to throw out mental beings. And it is this Agni which impels man, the mental being, to throw out of him the spiritual and eventually the supramental being. Because this Agni which is operating at different levels. Even when it is clouded and covered, as there are some stories in the Vedas, I don't remember them right now, but one of them is that how when it is clouded and then it when it comes out of the womb. So even when it is clouded, it serves a purpose. So what purpose it does? All impulsion to progress comes from an Agni. And we use it even in our common parlance. In Hindi, it is a common phrase which is said, aag hai ki nahi hai. Dil mein aag hai ki nahi. So this aag is, don't you want to progress? Don't you want to go to great heights? Don't you want to have mighty achievements? Ya kehte hain, uski aag thandi ho gayi. So Agni always aage. It leads us forward. So we see Agni is described as the leader of the journey, real priest. And Shobindu puts it very beautifully when he describes in Synthesis of Yoga about thought. So thought mind, the maruts, they also come into play. So maruts are the several these thought mind, thoughts which are taking us wide, taking us into different directions. So how Indra breaks, that's how the story goes, you know, and all the maruts are released. 49 maruts, udanchas. Why 49? That's another, because 7 sevens are 49. Now, I'm not going into this Vedic numbers. It's very fascinating how they come. So these maruts take that one truth into many directions, many fold ways it expresses itself. So maruts are there which come. Then there are the ashwins which are in the play. They are the physician of the gods. They correct our nervous system. And these are real gods. Aurobindo used to experience them in Chandanagar. And there's a famous story where Motilal Roy asked him, what are you seeing looking into the sky? And he says, I am conversing with the gods. So he says, what is the language they are using? He says, it's a sign language. So what are they saying? He says, I am trying to decipher that. So this in Chandanagar, he used to see these later on Akashic records and how they were communicating. There are some of Sri Aurobindo's writings which are in a script which is nowhere known which script it is. So it's okay that, you know, God speaks Sanskrit, but as Amrit Das' famous joke goes, that somebody told him, do you know Amrit, God speak in Sanskrit? So Amrit Das was a Tamilian, hardcore Tamilian. He said, you don't know the full truth. They speak in Sanskrit between themselves, but when they speak to human beings, they speak in Tamil. So you see, these gods have a very plastic function. They don't have a fixed kind of form the way we see crystallized in today's times. They are very plastic and they are wide in consciousness. So simultaneously they act. They are originally, these gods are all having a global consciousness, the great gods. Simultaneously they can touch many points together and act together. This is how the gods operate. They, at the same time, there are psychic beings, or rather this little spark of light which develops into a full-fledged psychic being. One of its destiny is, one of the possible destinies, one it can withdraw and merge into the one, another it can dwell on the higher planes, third is it can return and help in the work, and fourth, which is a very special destiny, which is granted only when it is the divine who has chosen a particular vessel for a certain purpose, then only that it can join from one of these descending lines of consciousness, that means unite with the gods. So we have these stories of Arjun, we have these stories of all the Pandav brothers, including Karna, all the six brothers, but of course he is not Pandav technically. So all of them join with these gods. So this, it's possible that man can join with one of the gods and his action will be very different. But there is something that they miss, and that's something very interesting, that though these gods are great and man in his infancy must worship them and grow. That's how he grows. Initially he worships them through nature because they are operating everywhere. So he worships them in nature, but as he develops, he discovers his own inner nature. So he begins to worship them in his own subjective self. So he begins to discover them as psychological entities. Soma is Ananda. But when he is again, so we have several layers of meaning and interpretation of these gods. So Ashwin Kumar, Suhil, they are real entities, and how they can help at different levels. There is a story where Prithvi Singh Nahar, who was almost blind at the age of 35, and yet he was given the task of reading Sri Aurobindo's typescript and typing it out, his handwriting and typing it out. So he was an authority. So when he was 35, he told the mother, this work you have given me, but actually, you know, I've been told that I'll grow blind in a few years' time. So mother looked at him for some time and then he says, forget about it, but you do the work. Till 70, if anybody has any doubt of what Sri Aurobindo has written, even if Sri Aurobindo had a doubt, then it was Prithvi Singh Nahar who had to see. So once he was besieged with a heart attack. Why I'm saying this, that these are not fantasies, they are real things. So he had a heart attack and he called the mother, and then he sees the two tall and young, youthful, handsome twins who came. And they were carrying a bag of something of sort on his back. And suddenly Prithvi Singh, when he saw them, he says, who are you? You are not allowed to touch me unless mother has sent you. So they smiled and then they suddenly plunged into his heart. That's the experience he had. And he felt some kind of massaging sensation, and they left and he was completely healed. And he asked the mother, that mother, is it true that were they Ashwin Kumars? And she said, how does it matter who they were? You called, you prayed, and I sent the gods. There are so many stories of the mother dealing with Indra, with different gods, and it's a whole world. Mother said, I know every god in every pantheon. In Greek gods, Egyptian gods, and she would describe, paucity of time, they are very interesting. But at the same time, she says something very interesting. And it is there in one of the prayers of Sri Aurobindo, where he says that, be wide in me, O Varuna, be solemn in me, O night. He invokes Usha, the first goddess who used to come, because they have not only masculine, feminine energies. Dev can apply for both, Devata and Devi. It's a term which applies, it's a unigender term. So he prays to all these gods, and then at the end he says, and liberate me, let me not be subject to any of these gods, O Kali. So while these gods were the path that the Vedic rishis chose, gods outside, gods within, in our subjective psychological state, they are two or one actually, and they are very fascinating things. It can be observed also, if you master a psychological tendency within yourself, it's very interesting that you can exercise a similar mastery on things which are outside. Yes, be wide in me, O Varuna. Thank you for sending that. And she has already posted Beluji, thanks to that. So the interesting part is that if we want to master outer nature and the world, we must arrive at self-mastery. And that's why Sri Aurobindo speaks of Swaraj followed by Samraj. Let's say, for example, if one masters the Rudra forces, forces of tremendous destruction. Of course, in the Rudra, they act under Shiva. So there is a knowledge. But when the same Rudra forces, as we know the whole story, and he is sent to earth, when they act in the Asuric nature, they are deflected from their true nature. So Asura's violence is unconscious violence. It's a meaningless violence. So if we master these forces within us, it's very interesting that if we meet a person who is extremely violent and is even rushing towards us, he will become quiet. If we master the storm of passions within us, then if there is, we are caught in a storm and we have mastered truly this energy of, you know, passion within us, we will be able to quieten this storm. This was the whole Vedic, this double sense on which the entire Vedic civilization was, you know, built. So each of these gods has a function, psychological as well as physical. They would give to man what he wanted. And we know how Ravan also did that kind of sadhana. He had mastered some of these gods, conquered them. At the same time, he started misusing them. So these gods, the moment these powers and energies we begin to misuse, of course they go away or they don't function in the way they should, because it's very difficult for them to take a human body. And yet there is something which they miss, and that's what the mother reminds us, because we have the story of Anusuya. This film was shown in playground, where we, I think we all know, so I won't elaborate on the story, but as the story goes, that Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, their consorts, they want to test that who is the greatest woman, feminine, and they think obviously it must be one of the three of us. And Narad tells them, no, there are better and higher ones than you on earth. So they can't believe it. They go to test one of them, whom Narad mentions, that is Anusuya, Arundhati Rishi's wife. And ultimately they are turned into children by her power. And this story, when the mother saw in the playground, she laughed a lot and she was very happy. She said, yes, only the human beings can have this power which even the gods do not have. It's very interesting. That's why in Nachiketa, in Kathopanishad, when he asks him the secret of immortality, what does Yama say? He says, even gods don't know it. Don't ask me this. He says, who else but you can tell me? So there is something which the gods miss out. See, these gods don't blink their eyes. They don't have tears. These gods are always a little above the earth. That's how they are portrayed. And they don't throw shadows. So they don't understand how earthly life, through the struggle, they have never fallen. And that's why Shobhinda says that the mystery of these fallen worlds, and how when the fallen creation comes back with the help of the gods, but it goes beyond them. So with the help of the gods is always this Devasur Sangram, where human beings participate. King Dashrath participated. Pururavas participated. So there are beings who participate. How? Because earth is that field. So gods are always taking creation up and the asuras are holding it back. But eventually man is meant to go beyond the gods. And she says, because of the presence of the divine portion, the psychic being in man, there is something that man can have which gods don't have. And what is that? First, the power of love. All other powers are there to grant this, but to feel the way human beings, that affection, that sympathy, that bond which comes, though sometimes we humanize the gods in the TV serials, but that's not how they operate. They are moved by the will inside and they act. You read Shobhinda's Ilion, you see how they act. They are not moved by that kind of... they may be moved even by compassion sometimes, but it is a point-to-point action. So whereas human beings, because of going through this, they have the psychic being, therefore we can love truly, and more importantly, we can directly join with the Supreme. So the mother says, ultimately, this privilege is given only to human beings. That's why we see every time the divine descends, he has to come down, he comes to earth. He doesn't come to Swargalok. He doesn't go to any other lok. He comes straight to earth because there is something special going on upon earth. So while these gods, we can look at them at two levels. One is where there are aspects of the one and fully aware of the one. That's in the supramental creation. There they are fully aware of the one. And there, when we find the one in the supermind, they are all together. So we don't need to go separately through the gods. But as creation comes lower and lower down, their function, their necessity becomes more and more. And so in the process of graduating, as we see, when we are in school, kindergarten, etc., we need many teachers. But when we do PhD, we have one teacher. Because now it's a kind of specialization taking place. So man's initial journey is through the gods. Whether he recognizes them, acknowledges them or not, that's not relevant. Even those who believe in reason and do away with the gods, they are still moved by the god of reason. That's the beauty. They don't care whether you worship them or not. Apollonians, who were extremely, you know, they believed in the human mind and its, and Dionysians who believed in delight or soma. So always Bacchus. So we have in every culture these gods, and one may not believe in it. Rudra, the tremendous forces of violence which are unleashed by certain beings. They may not believe in God. It doesn't matter. So belief and non-belief belongs to a different level. But there comes a time when shaped by the gods, as they say, they shape the soul of man as in a smithy. So they take man through a journey, sometimes a difficult, terrible journey, make him do seemingly impossible deeds like Chhatrapati Shivaji bringing down an entire Mughal empire, taking the challenge, or Guru Gobind Singh going fighting again with the Mughals with this great cry, Dehe Shiva Ye Varmo He Satkara Jase Kabhu Na Darun. So this is how they operate. So there are many manifestations or vibhutis of these gods, which we don't recognize because we are always looking at them the way we have been taught in a classical way. It's the same thing like there is a Veda which is written as slokas, which is okay, fair enough. But there is a deeper Veda which is written as secret knowledge in this entire creation, in the stone, in the sand, in the stars, in the flowers, in the pattern and bloom of the flower is woven, in the luminous net of the stars is caught, in the strength of a man, in the blush of a girl, the hand that sent Jupiter spinning through heaven spends all its cunning to fashion a curl. So that's how the Vedic civilization had developed. So we have within us something which is the leader even of the gods, and that's why we see Kartike, who is actually this, when this inner fire engages in a cosmic action, then it becomes, that's how the Kartike is the Agni, but in its cosmic action, Vishwanar. And we see that Kartike becomes the Devasenapati, he's the leader of the gods. Very interesting. So human beings, we hear these stories, they are true stories where human beings lead the evolutionary march of mankind at critical junctures. And it's not about belief and non-belief, but shaped by all these gods, a time comes when man is ready to be delivered straight away into the hands of Aditi. That is called the redemption of matter, the recovery of the consciousness completely. We are delivered from the struggle of the titans and the devas and the asuras within our hearts. And eventually, we are delivered into the consciousness of the one, where we see that the gods and the titans, though seemingly opposites, yet they both fulfill God's secret plan. So this is the totality of the picture of the gods. I think it's already time is over. So thank you so much. Chema. Chema.
I want to ask one question.
Yes, please.
Sir, what is one and half God? You said
one. There are several ways of looking at it. Half is the sign of something which is not complete. Half is moving towards one. All manifestation is half truth. The unmanifest is the other part of the truth. So to complete the integer, that's how Sri Krishna puts it. Vyaktoham avyaktoham. So the entire manifestation with the gods, everything is half. But this is the other half which waits in the folds of the unmanifest. And the one is beyond the manifest and the unmanifest, beyond the being and the non-being. That's the beauty of it. So that's how it is, one and a half. Yajnavalk didn't answer it. I'm just saying intuitively how I have understood it. Yeah.
What do you think about Psychiatry Knowledge Now by Dr. Satya Sai Panda? So, I don't know if he's alluding to, are you willing to give up psychiatry?
Why should I? But I can't practice psychiatry the way it is. See, this knowledge which the Vedic Rishis had and which we are recovering today and which will go beyond the Vedic Rishis' knowledge to the supramental consciousness, it will include every possible field, but with a more complete and comprehensive understanding. That does not mean that one will not use medication. Medication has its place, dravya guna. But it will include many other things which are not even accepted in today's psychiatry. But also the system of the Vedas is a big subject, so I am not entering into its detail. Well, this subject, which will be, psychiatry will, this specializing knowledge, this is psychiatry, this is philosophy, this is the human mind's way. But an intuitive mind doesn't operate like that, even an intuitive. The divine mind itself will not operate like this specialization. It can relate with objects as if they are real living beings because they are real living beings. Now, if you talk about this in psychiatric parlance, you would be scandalized. You want me to give up my degree. But well, degree or no degree, it's possible. And this is where the science of consciousness comes in. And Shobindo speaks about it in one of his early experiences when Barinda had mountain fever. And one Naga sannyasi came, gave him a glass and a particular mantra and said, you cut it like a sign of plus and give it to him. And he gave it to him and he was cured. Now this is possible. It's possible to charge any object. Because everywhere the gods are there. That's the beauty. Everywhere the one is there. That's why when Mata Sita picks up a grain, a trina, a blade of grass, and Ravan cannot cross it. But mankind has to progress so much. We are so hypnotized right now. So this knowledge you have to hold back when you operate. So I do practice psychiatry. And though probably Mother's Grace maybe can see many things which are otherwise not visible, but I can't either share them with the clients nor use it because it will be going beyond the brief. So that's my short answer.